Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. We are continuing our series on China with Mr. Pradeep Baijal, who, as I mentioned earlier, was the former chairman of the Telecom Regulatory Authority of India. He's also an author of three books, first on disinvestment, second on telecom reforms in India, and the third, which is relevant to our talk today, which is containing the China onslaught. In our first episode, we spoke about the background and the growth of China. In this episode, we'll talk a little bit about what is happening in China today. So, sir, with continuing from our last episode, we were speaking of Deng, and you have mentioned in your book that Deng believed in growth with folded hands. And from what I read about the President Xi Jinping now, he believes in growth with his checkbook diplomacy. So tell me a little bit about the approach of Deng Xiaoping and the approach of the current president.
See, if you look at Deng, Deng got into the president's villa through the prison. And therefore, he was a very humble man. And correct. China was also very poor. China was poorer than India. Mm-hmm. And therefore, he was always with folded hands. Correct. And that was also his diplomacy, that his facade was another and his real approach was different.
Correct.
Now, he came in with folded hands, but he took his policy decision very firmly. Right. And made the other person believe that he was a very humble person. Hmm. Now, there are two kinds of philosophies in China. One is the Confucius philosophy and the other one, which are represented in 36 stratagems. Mm-hmm. Now, Confucius was a philosopher who was a very kind man. He was a good man and he preached everything which was good. In these 36 stratagems, you have a number of strategies where mostly you make a fool of the other person. Mm-hmm. And you go forward.
Correct.
So, Deng started with 36 stratagems. Mm-hmm. When he put institutions in the US, they were all Confucius institutions, very pious man, very pious policies. Mm. So that was Deng's policy. When it came to Xi, now Xi came in when China had already become rich and Xi had climbed up in the party and he had become very senior. And even Mao had said once about Xi that when he comes in, he will make China great again. Mm-hmm. So that was the difference.
I see. That's interesting. So you even Mao spoke about Xi Jinping also, is it?
Yes, yes. He was in the party then. He read at a number of places that Mao used to be full of praises for Xi. But his background was different. Xi's father was a very senior leader. And this senior leader was punished by Politburo, was punished by Mao. But yet, when it came to the son, Xi's turn, it was recognized by everyone that he was a very strong man and he had ideas of his own.
Amazing. So you also mentioned that, you know, in the US, in Washington, the Chinese ambassador made a statement that they would shortly take over the world. Now, for an ambassador to make such a statement is not very ambassador-like. But does this come out of the old Chinese philosophy of expansionism?
You see, you must understand that in China, no one has powers.
Okay.
All the powers are with the Politburo. Hmm. So whatever comes out of the mouth of Mao or out of the mouth of Deng or out of the mouth of Xi, actually it's Politburo which is saying that. That is the most powerful body. Now, if you read a bit of history, China has not been a country, it has been a state. It has been much bigger than pure country only. Mm. So, and China has always been very expansionist. Mm. Now, if you see, there was a famous dynasty, Qing dynasty, that was somewhere in 500 something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they acquired a lot of area around China because the borders were not very clear. Then you come to Mao. He also acquired a number of countries, Tibet and so many other countries. Mm-hmm. Then you come now to Xi. All these exercises of redefining the LSC, the redefining the LOC, going to South China Sea, going and acquiring a lot of Pakistan. Now, all that came in the time of Xi. Mm-hmm. So what happened in China is that a person is revered if he is an expansionist.
Correct.
Because the culture of China is expansionist. Mm-hmm. They are not yet a democracy. They don't understand the compulsions of a democracy.
Correct.
So therefore, since they are expansionists, therefore, the Chinese ambassador also says, well, I'm very powerful, and they are very powerful today because they have a lot of money.
Correct. So before I come to the LAC and Doklam, you mentioned also that Xi Jinping had an unhappy childhood.
Well, that I think I mentioned that his father was punished. His father was a very senior leader. Mm-hmm. And his father had fallen out with the Politburo, and therefore he was punished. Mm. And as a child, therefore, Xi had an unhappy childhood. Mm.
And on a more macro level, what is your opinion of China's thinking of India?
Oh, China thinks of India as a nuisance.
Okay.
And an unnecessary nuisance. Mm-hmm. They recognize that India is a weak state. So far it was. Mm. And they will do nothing. Mm. And they must acquire parts of which gives them a strategic advantage. Mm. Look, they never had a road, and they could never have a road to the Arabian Sea. And the road could only go through India.
Correct.
And therefore, they constructed that road in Pak-occupied Kashmir.
Yep.
And India started protesting mildly. It is only now that we are protesting loudly, because once China is open to the Arabian Sea, then they have a lot of strategic advantage. Mm. So again, a nuisance India in between. So they have used Pakistan. Even in Pakistan, there are protests about that road.
Correct.
Then I remember some oil wells were being sold in Myanmar. Mm. India was also a bidder, but then they got the oil well. Mm. And they constructed a road from the oil well to China through Myanmar. Mm-hmm. And the same road they're now using to get to the Bay of Bengal.
Correct.
So they are a large country and they want to expand. Mm-hmm. And China, for good or and India, for good or bad, is next door and covers a lot of vital areas. Mm-hmm. And that's why they think India should either be purchased or should be subjugated. Mm-hmm. And they can never be friendly with India, therefore. Mm-hmm.
And one is the Doklam pre-Ladakh kind of an opinion China has. But in your opinion, has the view of China started to change about India?
No, the view of China has not changed at all. Mm-hmm. India has forced itself into a much better position.
Okay.
India has started asserting itself. For the first time during the present government, India has started asserting itself. You recall that what happened in the 1962 war.
Right.
We were stronger than China at that time. Mm. But you know what happened in the 1962 war. Incidentally, United States has also declassified the 1962 war files.
I see.
And I had looked at some of the files of that time very recently. And for any serious reader, you can go and open the 1962 war. There are three files of the American government. Mm-hmm. So, we didn't have a disadvantage, but we were beaten up. Mm-hmm. And China never expected that they'll have a walkover. They had a walkover.
That's very interesting. I'm glad you told me, because I would love to read those 62 files, because my father served in Tawang area in 1962. He was there in the...
We made fool of ourselves in the politics of the army. Yes. In the political government. Made a fool of itself in the politics of the army.
Absolutely. So, sir, continuing with China's expansionism, let's talk about, you know, some of the countries one by one. And what I was fascinated about was, very recently, where China actually made a claim to Vladivostok, which is Russia. And my reaction was, how can two countries, very similar kind of thinking, actually have one way, one turn around and say that one part of your country, Vladivostok, which is the eastern part of Russia, belongs to China? And of course, then they've got problems with Japan and Philippines and everything else. But I'll come to that. But I'd love to get some of your perspective on how deep can expansionism go where you take on everybody.
Yes, I made a statement that China is an expansionist country, number one. I also made a statement, it is in their genes.
Correct.
They want to do. And they are basically a communist government. They are an absolute government, and therefore they want to go. And a person who is an expansionist is revered in China.
Correct.
So that's why they want to go to. And that is why also I said that China can never be friends with India. Because you are right next to each other, and you are a target of my expansionism.
Correct.
Same thing applies to Russia. And that is why Russia has never been friendly with China, even though the senior Marxist country, Russia at one time used to be the hero of China. But there have been earlier wars also against between China and Russia, and Vladivostok is a part of the same philosophy.
Interesting. What are your thoughts on the alliances that are now beginning to form? You know, one which is talked about a lot now is the Quad, which is America, Japan, India, and Australia. And all other countries seem to be joining with the primary objective of being able to control the Pacific Ocean.
You see, it is like this. China feels that, number one, China feels that it has bought a number of leaders in the world.
Correct.
And those leaders will talk in favor of China. Mm. Again, the checkbook diplomacy.
Yeah.
In India also, they have bought a number of leaders. And again, it's a checkbook diplomacy. Mm. China has also realized that now, with their acquiring so much of power and money, everyone wants to be part of Chinese dream of national rejuvenation. I myself, when I studied China in so many countries which were impacted by China, I found that during the two terms when I was interested in China much earlier and now, I found that a number of American authors, a number of Indian authors, a number of European authors now write openly in favor of China.
True.
And China itself has said that we have bought out a number of leaders. So they think that when the world is not very stable, there are any number of disputes around the world and between nation states, it is an ideal time to go forward.
Correct.
And pursue their old philosophy. At the 19th Communist Party National Congress on October 18, 2017, Xi Jinping delivered a major speech in which he declared, and let me read it because only then you will understand. The Chinese nation has stood up, grown rich, and is becoming strong to realize the Chinese dream of national rejuvenation.
Okay.
And then he says that success of so many dynasties is judged by the expansion of territory throughout history. And then Mao, as I said, had captured Tibet, Aksai Chin, etc. So therefore, Xi thinks that with a divided world all over, he can buy a number of countries through their leaders. And therefore, what is he doing? Takeover of Hong Kong, playing around with the maps of Japan, Nepal, Pakistan, Bhutan, India, etc. And Xi has also realized that there is a lot of noise in the world about what China is doing. But yet, in 2018, the American multinational firms' investment in China was $12.9 billion. In 2019, it became $14.1 billion. So they feel that it is their compulsion that they're investing in China and not vice versa. Okay. There was a survey, yes. There was a survey of by American Chamber of Commerce mm-hmm. in March 2020, where they said, the survey said that the 80% of American companies are not considering relocating their manufacturing out of China.
Mm.
Here our newspapers say, no, everyone is walking out of China. Mm. But the surveys, which I am quoting, they are different.
Mm.
And therefore, I had said right in the beginning, that when I started writing the book, I didn't understand. But as I write the book, so as I study more, as I write articles, as I come before you, I find that the world is changing very fast, not against China. It's a divided world which is trying to stand up against a totally unified China. And who unifies China? The Politburo. And who unifies China? The Congress Party. And even their army is Congress Party. And that is what is written in literature. So it's a very dangerous period for the world, that unless the democracies unite, they will not be able to stand up to a dictatorial China. I read recently that one journalist did a program on China, which he criticized China severely, and he was warned by the embassy of China. Now, which really means that China has realized that it's a divided world and they can go forward. If you listen to the Democrat presidential nominee, and if you listen to the Chinese broadcast too, they said that Biden will be an ideal president. And Biden believes in worldwide cooperation. Now, you can cooperate with a country when it is cooperating with you. But in China, that doesn't seem to be happening. In China, seems to be believing that they have so much of power that they will bring around all other countries to their point of view.
What is Pakistan's role in the grand scheme of things for China, other than, of course, the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor? And they apparently have spent some $65 billion, which is a debt that Pakistan has to pay.
Yes, I'm very surprised that there are protests against this project even in Pakistan. But basically, I don't think it's a Pakistani strategy. I think Pakistan has become captive to China, and it is the Chinese strategy which Pakistan has to follow.
Very interesting. And what about your views on? Let's talk of some of the other countries, like say Japan, or the Spratly Islands in the Philippines, or Vietnam. I mean, all of them are now beginning to get edgy. I was also reading recently, 3-4 days ago, the Sri Lankan president has said that they will be much more closely aligned to India, even though China will remain a friend, when the same president had almost abandoned relationships with India. Same thing is beginning to happen in Africa. What is beginning to change, sir?
Yes, I told you that I was most bugged by Bush's letter. I didn't understand why that letter was.
Yes.
I'm most bugged by Chinese behavior, by the behaving like this.
Right.
And I've tried to give some explanations from the literature that I've read about China.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here, because China is becoming very powerful, and because it's a totalitarian country, and it believes in growth and power and expansion, therefore, the democracies of the world must get together to neutralize China. And they are getting together. You have this D10, G7 converting to D10, etc. And standing up in one forum against China, that China also pursues democratic ways to sort out problems and not military ways.
One last question before I end this episode, and that is going to be on, you made a comment that a lot of leaders have been purchased by China, and a lot of journalists have been purchased by China. I'd like you to just talk a little bit more about what your thoughts in this are. I mean, these leaders have to live within their own countries as well.
You see, I can give you a 1-hour lecture
okay.
on why we should be cooperative with China.
Right.
I can give you a 1-hour lecture.
Yes.
And I'll give you a better lecture if I'm paid for it.
Mm.
That's all. Because in most of the countries, different kinds of groups behave differently. Individuals behave differently. And so some, you see in India, there are so many journalists who are writing in favor of China.
Right.
That China is a neighbor, China is trying to cooperate. We have a great advantage by being a part of the road project of China. Mm. India will open up, etc. And that we should cooperate. There are all kinds of opinion, and the power of a democracy is
right.
that all opinions get expressed,
right.
all opinions get debated,
correct.
And at the end of it, you get a final verdict. That is in a country like China, the thought starts with the leader, goes down to the entire mass of people, the entire group of people, and then the idea comes back to the leader. So it's a defective system where the real views of the vast population are never heard. But it may change. Marxism may change also. But today, that doesn't seem to be so.
And based on, again, all your readings and all the people you speak to, do you see, you know, it's often said that when a citizen has wealth, has a full stomach, they want to think. And they want to express themselves. China has reached achieved a lot of prosperity, but yet I don't see that thinking and asking for more freedom coming in China. Why do you think that is happening?
Yeah, that's happening precisely because the process of reaching decisions in China, because it's a communist country, it's an outdated process. After all, you are aware, and I am aware, that a very powerful politics of communism is going away all over the world. And particularly in this period where the means of communication have become very strong, the defective argument gets eliminated faster. And therefore, there is only one or two communist countries in the world.
True. So, my last question to you.
I must add, the professor in Harvard, Tarun Khanna, who keeps writing about the strength of India, and who keeps saying that India will ultimately grow more powerful than China. I used to feel that this is not possible because China has a machinery which is much stronger. But after a long time, after reading all this, I have started feeling that this may be possible if the democracies of the world unite.
Correct.
But again, it appears difficult.
Correct. And another person who I follow a lot is Gordon Chang in the US, who is so anti-China, and he's Chinese. And he's constantly complaining about what is happening, and is continuously saying that Xi Jinping's days are numbered. But my last question to you for this episode, sir, is that what, in your opinion, are the ambitions of President Xi Jinping to become
is a Chinese leader. And the Chinese nation believes in power. The Chinese nation believes in more territory. The Chinese nation believes that we have a right to all the places which are vaguely ours, and they are not prepared to go by international multilateral organizations. After all these multilateral organizations were created after the First World War and the Second World War.
Correct. Correct.
So that there could be reconciliation and arbitration between nations. But those seem to have gone weaker with the WTO, with the WHO, with so many organizations within the United Nations getting weaker by China not following their dictum.
Correct. And yet being very powerful members of each of these organizations.
Yes, yes. So these are interesting things,
right.
And I'm sure they will be better determined by a more democratic world than what it was in the past.
So, Mr. Bejal, thank you very much. It has been such a pleasure speaking to you again. And we have spoken in our first episode on the background of the growth of China. In this episode, we have spoken about the behavior of China and what leads the Chinese people to react the way they do. And in our third episode, we will talk about what are Mr. Bejal's ideas to tame China, and between India and China and America, who will win. So thank you very much. Come back to us again soon and we'll talk again. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.